boys and girls. Welcome back. Henrik here with Red Ice TV. Today we're going to speak with Otto van Melderen from the NSV out of Belgium, or actually, more correctly, it's from Vlaams or Flandern in Belgium. Welcome. Good to have you here.
Hello, Henrik. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you here. So I love the outfit, by the way. Tell us about that a little bit.
Thank you. Well, it's actually the traditional student outfit with us in Flanders and in some parts in Germany as well. It's actually the big band, which means I'm actually the boss of our club, which carries the three colors, which is red and white of Antwerp, our city colors, and black from the Flemish flag, the lion of our Flemish flag. And also the cap, the gray cap with the colors as well, and some other marks, which indicates how many years I'm studying and that kinds of stuff.
Interesting. So tell us about the union a little bit. I think it was formed in, was it the 70s, mid-70s? As a kind of a response to the 68ers movement, right?
Yes, indeed. It was actually founded by Edwin Truijs, a student here in Antwerp in the days. And it was indeed a bit of a reaction to the leftist campaign, and actually also because there wasn't really a right-wing conservative nationalist student organization in Antwerp at the time. So that is actually one of the core points of the NSV, a club or a community for students where they can talk and discuss Flemish nationalism here in Antwerp and other parts in Flanders as well.
So how big is it? How many members do you guys have at this point? Is it growing? I hear it's more and more people are attracted to it these days, right?
Yes, indeed. As for now, we are active in actually most student cities in Flanders, which is Antwerp, Ghent, Brussels, Leuven, and Bruges at this time. We have about, I'm not really 100% sure, I think we have about 100 active student members and a lot of older members who are not students anymore but still frequently visit us on many activities. And actually, our numbers are not that big, but we have a lot of prominent older members in the Flemish right wing society here in Flanders.
Interesting. So, of course, you guys are rooted, you know, in the Flemish movement. This is, of course, initially this was, I guess, it was its own kingdom at one point, right? And of course, Belgium is a fairly recent formation, a recent nation. And the next level to the problem, if you will, is that the EU, the European Union, has positioned itself as a headquarter in Brussels, in Belgium, which has further kind of fractioned the population a little bit. But for those who don't know, Otto, tell us about kind of the ethnic makeup of Belgium and why it is that you guys are kind of basically just represent the northern part. Am I correct?
Yes, indeed. It has actually, as long as Flanders has been around, which is a very long time, since the 800s, I believe. It has already been with a culture of a people. It has evolved. It has been, is known many masters and many kings, from the Habsburgs to the Spanish rule, and eventually the Netherlands, the 17 provinces. Also a long part of French rule, long before that. And in the end, there was the Belgian Revolution, which actually split up the Netherlands to the Belgian part and the Holland part we have today, which was actually also supported by the French, who thus could manifest their influence in Flanders and Belgium as a whole, of course. It's also important to note that Flanders has always been a very industrial part, especially since the coal mines in Wallonie dried up. Flanders, with the port in Antwerp, has been the largest part of industry in Belgium, and also the engine of our economic welfare.
So that's really interesting, you know, because I think it was King Leopold II. He was positioned by the Windsor family, I believe, to take control of Belgium. The formation was fairly recent, and so there has been, for a long time, kind of a split, I guess, within the population. They speak different languages. And it's been very difficult to create kind of a really cohesive nation. So that's, of course, why, you know, your movement is important, because you have a different language. I mean, is there, I don't know, has there been any, as far as you know, genetic like tests? Is there, I wouldn't assume there's a big difference, but is there any differences between the different groups in Belgium right now, would you say?
I'm not 100% sure about any genetic differences. Certainly since a lot of the European nations have lived next to each other and have been especially genetically been mixed up a lot. But certainly in culture, there is a difference, a substantial difference. The Wallonie has always been French speaking, while Flanders has always been Flemish speaking. The prominent, as you say, Leopold, for example, he was king of Belgium, but he spoke only French. So a lot of the politics, a lot of the lawmaking also in Flanders was French. So a lot of common people could not understand anything, could not protect themselves against any legal authorization from rich French-speaking enterprises, communities, people. So the Flemish language has a very big part in our community in Flanders.
Tell us a bit about the ideology, I guess, background. Of course, you're, as you said, you're a conservative movement, more right-wing, nationalist movement, in kind of balancing out some of the left-wing movements that have been so prominent in Central and Northwestern Europe, like the 68ers that we mentioned. But what should people know about the group and about kind of your activities and what you're doing?
Well, we are a group of students, so we are organized and we are for and with students in all the student cities, and especially to teach them and to give them a bigger meaning of our Flemish identity, and also national and international currents. We organize a lot of lectures, debates, speakers, national and international, to keep ourselves and our meaning, our opinions up to date. So we are not afraid of any discussions or of any criticism as well. As a matter of fact, controversial ideas and topics are never shunned by the NSV. There is always room for the ideas which you cannot speak about or talk about with other people or just your friends at the bar, for example. So that's one very important part. Otherwise, it's also our militant part, which is quite important. We are not afraid to step out on the streets and to give to heed our words and to make sure, like the protest of a couple of weeks ago, that some things are heard to the bigger public.
Yeah, exactly. Let's talk about that a little bit, because it was a very good organization behind this. And of course, you guys were actually bringing attention, further attention, to the white farmers in South Africa that are being targeted and murdered. They're being dispossessed of their land. They're being, actively kind of targeted by the state down in South Africa. And you guys were, where did this took place, by the way? Which city? Antwerp?
In Ghent.
In Ghent, that's right.
It's actually a yearly thing. So each year we organize with the entire national wing of the NSV for a march. And so this year it happened in Ghent. So this year also it was a silent march, also in memory of all the victims of the Plaasmoorden, as they are called, the farm killings in South Africa, and also to manifest more media attention to this occurrence, the murders that are happening today and will be happening tomorrow and the day after tomorrow as well, if nothing is going to change. We noticed as well that since we started and announced the march, there has been a lot of media attention as well, not only in the media, but also in the political landscape, especially here in Flanders, also with Lauren Southern's documentary about the farm killings. It has helped a lot to manifest the to manifest some attention around this significant problem.
Yeah, it feels like it's opened up a little bit. For a while, supposedly, right, it was only evil racists that were talking about
indeed.
This, right? But these days, it's become a little bit more mainstream. Of course, Australia, one of the ministers there, I forget his name now. We talked about it just a couple of weeks ago, but I forget his name. Who had actively talking about actually taking in the farmers, taking in the white people out of South Africa, giving them asylum, basically. And this garnered even more international attention. You've had people like over in the UK, Katie Hopkins, she's been down there in the wake of this. And a lot of people are talking about it now. People are realizing that this is a thing. You know, all those evil people that were talking about this for a long time, this is really happening. How long have you guys been doing this? How many years in a row is this been going on?
We have done it since our creation, so since 1976.
Really? Wow.
So every year since, and it varies. Last year it was in Antwerp, the year before in Leuven. And for example, the topic of the march last year was I'm not sure how to translate this in English. It was actually for Europe to rise and to rebel against the establishment, which is crumbling now. It was the time that Trump got elected. There were the big elections in the Netherlands as well, France. So we were lifting on that stream to rise up against the establishment.
It's close, you know. We're getting closer. We're inching closer each election. And of course, the window is closing at the same time demographically, which is, makes it so hopeless in one way, because it's like, you know, the fewer we are, or the more of the minority is growing, the more difficult it is to get a nationalist, just a pure, like, you know, nationalist party in place in positions of power in a European country, so that they can finally close the doors and stop, you know, reversing the trend. So it feels to me that there's a window. We can talk more about that later, Otto. But so this is a great, you know, march. It was. So you said it was different because I see different banners and stuff there too. So was it a couple of different groups, right, that comes together?
Indeed. So you see the banner here. It's from Voorpost, which is a Flemish Dutch organization. So they are for the reunion of Flanders with the Netherlands. And they also maintain the security in all our manifestations. So there is a lot of gratitude towards them. Also, we had some friendly organizations, which is Schild en Vrienden, Shield and Friends, which comes from a yell in the Brugse Metten, which is an historical fact in Flanders, which is very important to us. And they are a new organization, which is mostly internet-based. And they were there as well with a large group of people. So it's all beginning to come together. A lot of different groups, a lot of different people coming together, united. So that's very nice to see.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's great to see this level of activism. It's great that you guys are bringing attention to this. And it's always seems very well organized. Is there any problem with counter-protest? I don't even see a single police in this footage. I would assume that you guys have a, you know, permit for it and everything. Everything is set up, but I don't see like any ruckus, if you know what I mean.
Well, the police is actually very prominent during the march, especially since every year when we do our march, the leftists, especially the communists and the Marxists, organize a counter march.
I would figure, yeah.
Which they say it's actually every year.
How dare you protest people getting murdered?
Yes, indeed. So especially this year, it was a silent march.
Something
silent
march
in commemorations of the victims, and they even said, "Yeah, we can't let those Nazis spread their hate around in our city, in our streets." So it's actually quite funny. I don't think it even matters to them anymore what we say or what we do. It's just flat out racism and hate.
There's some counter-process footage here while you're talking.
Yes, indeed.
Anyway.
But this year as well, we were with a lot more people than them. Even the police always says to us that they're glad they can stand with us because we never make trouble. we don't cause any aggressive acts in contradiction to most of the leftist protesters.
So what would you say that many people in Belgium are kind of aware of you guys' activity? And when you do a manifestation, demonstration like this, do people write about it there in the media and it garners some attention? Or what usually happens? What's the response by your everyday Flandern and Belgian down there?
Well, actually, the media is not very keen on us. Mostly when they are there, they hope to shoot some trouble, or they hope to make like a big thing about the aggressive right-wing nationalist protesting. But when that doesn't happen, it's usually just a small article in the news. Actually, but afterwards, there was some media attention from The Economist, which we talked to for about half an hour, which was published last week, if I'm not mistaken, in a bigger article about the alt-right in Flanders and the rest of Europe.
It's funny how, you know, the USA, the American news is so the drives the global news, or the news in the Western world, I should say, that people in your country are starting to call you guys alt-right, although you've been around for like 30 years before.
Yes,
you know, it is funny. This just catches on and everyone writes about it. It's ridiculous. I mean, obviously your organization wouldn't self-identify as such, but is there some parallels, if we can talk about that?
Yeah, of course. There are, of course, along the entire right-wing movement, some parallels and some contradictions around every viewpoint. But I don't know. I've read many contradictory definitions around the alt-right, but we organize also a lot around the modern means of communication. So Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, we have a very active page. And we speak to a lot of younger people also with memes, with actions, with interesting videos. So that's the way of the modus operandi, so to say, is maybe in common to some of the definitions I've read about the alt-right. Qua political or ideologies, I think it's quite difficult to say which ones we have in common, since I'm not very familiar with the different viewpoints of the entire alt-right movement.
No, exactly. Of course, it's fairly fragmented, I would say. There's many different factions, and of course the media just calls everyone that now because it's kind of the buzzword. And so you can be a hardcore national socialist and you get called that, or you can be a conservative alt-light, as we say, person, and they also get called that, so it doesn't matter. But what do you think people should know about what's happening in South Africa? Is the South African farm murders and all that kind of stuff, are you well versed in that? Have you studied and researched that? I mean, I would assume that your group have, I guess, meetings where you guys obviously discuss things. You have lectures internally. You're educating each other about what's happening. So is this a big area, if you will, that you guys have learned about?
Yes, the farmer news, ever since we announced the march, we have been looking into it and following up all the news around it. So it's actually a coincidence that Lauren Southern's documentary was published not soon after. So that was very very interesting to see and to have some interviews she made. But as well as the numbers, the people, there was also a South African delegate with us on the march who did a short speech. And of course, in our respective groups in Antwerp, Ghent, Leuven and everything, there were some evenings and some talks about what's happening in South Africa and what we can do to help.
Yeah, do you think, I mean, many people are talking about the fact that South Africa is kind of a primer, a precedence in terms of what might happen in other European countries, and Belgium in particular is far out on that edge as well. Of course, you've had your fair share of terrorist attacks, radical Islamic, you know, preachers and stuff like that. Even the people might recognize some of the neighborhoods like Molenbeek, for example, that was in the news after the last major terrorist event where a lot of these people were hiding and stuff like that. It's a big problem in Belgium, a massive problem specifically with the Muslim population. But, you know, there are many others too that are just flooding in. Tell people a little bit about that, how you view that, what's happening in the country. And then a little bit later, we can talk about, you know, what the EU is doing in regards to all of this. But just give people paint a picture for people if you can.
Well, especially the situation in Belgium is very complex, since we've talked about the Walloon and the Flemish side. So there is a very big controversy between the two sides. And this allows for a lot of groups to actually implement their own influence into certain regions. We see now the past 20 years that especially the left side of our political spectrum tried to use or bribe, so to say, a lot of those immigrants to vote for them and to be nice to them and to offer a lot of special deals to them in hope they would vote for them, and so counterbalance the right wing rise here in Flanders and in Belgium, which has failed miraculously, because the immigrants, especially in Molenbeek and in Borgerhout, they don't like the leftist way of thinking, the easy we are all friends and we can play together and sing happy songs. They're not for that. So in fact, they're a little bit betrayed by their own way of thinking. So that allows for those cities and parts of cities to be created. And now we are stuck with problems in Molenbeek, in actually every large city here in Flanders. We have those places. I would not necessarily say no-go zones. It's a little bit more complex, but definitely cities where places and cities where the law does not work on the way it should anymore.
Yeah, exactly. We have, you know, no-go zones definitely in Sweden right now. It's really bad, and it's growing. I mean, these are colonies. These are foreigners that have invaded the lands, and they're slowly just kind of taking over. And so, what is tell us about what the NSV is doing a little bit to bring kind of awareness to that and to try to help to persuade people to change their minds. I mean, I think one of the better approaches to this is to speak to the youth, of not just having the older people being aware of this. I mean, many older people can understand it because they can see it. They can see the change. They lived at a time when multiculturalism wasn't there. But when many of these, you know, kind of the boomer generation, when they start dying, then it might be more and more difficult to reach people. That's why you have to speak to the youth, obviously.
Yes, indeed. The number one thing we try to do as students is to just go out with our hat and our band. And we just go in the student milieu. We go to parties, we go to bars, we talk to people, and people come to us talking. Which is a very big thing. We have the luxury when we talk to people that we are right. We have the truth behind us, which is always a nice position to be in. So in talking to people, most of them don't necessarily have to be of the same opinion afterwards, but they definitely agree. They see the certain points we analyze with them, and that is one of the main points. And afterwards, if they decide to become part of the NSV, we form them. We organize lectures, debates, everything, even for ourselves, that we keep up to date and we keep informed about everything that's going on in the world, so that our opinion itself can change.
What would you say in terms of why some of the youth and maybe why some of the left-wingers have accepted the situation? Are you guys getting the, you know, well, we had colonies. I mean, we know that the situation is Congo. In Congo was, of course, very, very brutal and stuff like that. We know that. But again, that was run by the establishment. It was run by King Leopold. It was the rubber industry and all that stuff. There are some pretty interesting documentaries about that kind of stuff. But again, there was nothing to do with the people. The people never benefited really from that. But are you guys getting that the history lecture that, well, we deserve it because we did this and that? Or what's the general attitudes like of like the left winger?
Yeah, it's definitely in our education. It's, I think, as everywhere around the modern world, we are almost brainwashed. If you don't come from a very outspoken right-wing family, it's very easy to just go with the flow and go in the propaganda that it's all our fault and the Congo and everything that's happening nowadays is all our fault and the white male is the biggest misery that has come to us. But we also notice that more and more people open their eyes. It's actually as how many things get more and more absurd in a certain way. A lot of people realize the absurdness and actually come to us and say, what you're saying is not that extreme, or it's just common sense. So that's an evolution we like to see and we experience a lot the past few years.
Let's talk about the demographics a little bit. You sent an article to me that we can pull up here. It's pretty interesting, talking about, it's in Dutch, but it's talking about the future generations. Tell us about the what's going on with this here.
Yeah, it was a study from the city of Antwerp, actually. So
that's not kind just, of, would you say Antwerp is like, that's the capital of Flanders, right?
Well, officially, the capital is Brussels still.
Of Belgium?
Antwerp is the second most... the second biggest city in Flanders, because we obviously see Brussels still as a part of Flanders.
Okay, yeah, I see. I didn't know that.
The city where I'm from with the port and also a lot of crime and the big part of the city that has been infested. So 75% of the children from 0 to 9 years old will be in 30 years foreign. So that's 75% of all the children in Antwerp, which is astronomically high in 30 years. So that means virtually there is not a single possibility for any right-wing party in Antwerp to be elected probably into the city council. Within 30 years, it will be practically impossible to get any party in there. Which is it's alienating.
Yes.
We talked about Antwerp a few minutes back, and when you walk around, certainly in certain parts near the train station, you realize what this change that this change is happening, and it already happened in certain parts of the city, and that's about to become every part of the city.
Yeah, I remember going through Antwerp, and I was shocked. We were going through by car, and I think we took, you know, you talked about the train. When the train comes into Antwerp, you literally have like the wrong side of the tracks and the better side of the tracks. And I think we went into the wrong side of the track. It had been some bank robbery or something like that, I think. And there was just tons of Muslims, of Arabs out in the streets, of Middle Easterners. And I was like, where the hell are these beautiful buildings? Like, you know, fantastic architecture with a foreign population and with traffic rules like Egypt or something. You know, it was bizarre. It's bizarre. I just don't. Who's doing this to you guys? Who's doing this to us? Because it's happening in most European countries right now. Let's talk about the EU a little bit. Are they the primary instigators, or have this been kind of a predecessor within the Belgian political left wing that has initiated this?
I think it's a little bit of both. Belgium has been a crucial part in the European Union along its history, and they used to say, if Belgium works, then the European Union shall work, because we have all those these problems in Belgium, but
it doesn't work,
stay together. Yeah, so indeed we try to say, but Belgium doesn't work, and so the European Union as well will not work, but we couldn't quite get the idea across apparently. But also a lot of actually horrible Belgian politicians made their way into the European level. Maybe you've heard of Guy Verhofstadt from the ALDE faction, I think, liberal. He actually all the things he did in Belgium, actually the state, the malfunctioning of the state, he is now working further to promote that in Europe. He is against nationalism. He believes it breaks the European Union, mm-hmm. or Europe. And he's one of the people that would promote this kind of immigration and this kind of settling or integration, which is clearly not happening with us.
No, exactly. It's segregation, colonies, as I said. And
yes.
I who knows where that's going to end. We're going to take a break here in just a little bit, but we're going to talk a little bit more about the organization, how people can become members, how they can help you guys out, what you have upcoming and stuff like that. But what do you think is going to happen if this remains unchecked? What direction is this going to take?
I think that nowadays, actually, the segregation is one of the biggest bonuses we can actually get. As long as those people manifest themselves in certain parts of the city and do not integrate at all, there is still a very clear difference between the us and them.
Yeah.
And it's that many people are afraid of, and many people see if people start integrating, and partially or not really pretend, but are integrating on a very slow rate, and meanwhile changing the society we live in into actually a multicultural mono diversity, that's far more dangerous.
I agree.
Those people have their very fixed identity, and as long as they maintain theirs, I think it will be easier for us to maintain ours and to try to work on a cure or something to solve the problems, and maybe even return to a culturally strong and nationalist country.
Yeah, I agree, because I mean, if the genetic heritage goes, then everything is gone, everything is out the window. And so that's why I'm with you. I know that a lot of, for a long time, many conservatives, they were talking about, no, we need to integrate. These people need to become part of us, and then it will work, and everything will be fine, kind of thing. And I doubt that too. It's always going to be on the cost of something, of someone, of course, obviously. But interestingly enough, it was the left that started pushing this idea that they shouldn't integrate. That was a racist, colonialist line of thinking, because that means that they need to adapt to our culture. So right now, which is interesting, means that there's some overlap to a certain extent where people like us, we're like, we're fine with that. Let's keep it that way, because that will create a clear distinction. And it's better that way, because that ensures that the genetic consistency is there, and that the diversity that we have is continued, and that we remain a unique people. So, and I think it's getting worse in terms of the integration process from not from our perspective, but I'm meaning integration is not working. It's getting more segregated. It's becoming more clear that it is a them and us kind of situation that's arising. And I'm fine with that. And I know that poses problems in the long term. And it's going to probably, who knows how that's going to play out at the end, if there's going to be even harder competition over territory and resources and things like that. We'll just have to see. But what I'm concerned with, and I'm with you with that, is the genetic heritage. Buildings, resources, economy, all those things can be re-established. We can do that again. We've done that again. Most European nations have survived horrible world wars and stuff, and we've risen out of the ashes many times. So that's not the problem. If we lose our genetic heritage, then it's all gone, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, indeed. And I think actually that the segregation or the lack of integration is the greatest thing, since I do have a lot of foreign friends, so people from Congo, from Afghanistan, and actually it's easier to talk to them about culture and nationalism and to be proud of one's nation.
Isn't that weird? That's interesting.
A lot of Flemish friends of mine, which is indeed it's completely crazy. A lot of people that say, oh, you can't be a Flemish nationalist because that's racist, and why do you think your culture is better than anyone else's? But when I talk about that to a friend of mine from the Congo, which, following the leftist way of thought, we should be unable for me, a Flemish nationalist, to be friends with one of them. He says to me, yeah, I'm proud of my country. You should be of yours, of course. Do you ever tell them,
well, then why don't you go back to your country?
That's of course a little bit more complex.
Yeah,
but it's the mentality of the a lot of leftists
sure. Yeah.
To think they know what goes around in the minds of everybody, as well as certainly the minds of the poor, discriminated immigrants. I sense also that the immigrants are fed up with it too. And that poses an opportunity for us, and certainly a threat to those leftists, which is, in my opinion, not too bad.
Interesting. Yeah. So let's talk a bit more about that angle on the EU and stuff like that in the second segment. But I want to obviously just let people know, you know, if they're listening, and I assume that, you know, we have listeners from Belgium and stuff. They already know about you guys and all that. But let's assume not. How do people join? What do you guys have coming up? Tell us a little bit about that. And this is the right website I'm showing, correct?
Yes, indeed.
Okay, good.
That's our go-to website, in fact. You should know that every week we organize about 5 activities in all different student cities. So that's weekly activities in Antwerp, Leuven, Ghent, Brussels, and Bruges. So they are very free to come join, no matter who they are, where they come from, or if they have any history with the club. It's easiest to find us on Facebook, on our local communities, which is just mostly NSV Antwerpen or NSV Ghent or Leuven, or go to the site you just showed, and you can send a mail as well there to the site, and we will answer that very shortly. That indeed is the national page, which also you can see a lot of our actions and some movies about our past year. Yeah, I think that's it. If most of the time we have lectures or bar moments, which is in our club cafes. So definitely a good place to start there. Just come to us in a cafe, have a drink, have a talk, and see if it's for you.
Tell us a bit about what you hope the organization can achieve in the future. Where would you guys like to go with it if you had, I mean, as always, most organizations like this, they do struggle with resources. They do struggle with not membership these days, I would say. It's usually many of them are growing because, it you know, things are so bad. But in terms of resources, where would you guys like to go if you had, you know, close to unlimited resources? Is there any a branch that has a political party or that you're affiliated with in politics?
We are apolitical. We don't support any political party. Of course, there is parties that are closer aligned to us than others, obviously. But we choose not to side with any political party. For the obvious reasons of the political mess here in Flanders and in Belgium, but also if we had the unlimited resources, I would still see our group, our community, not with the masses. It's really the one of the ideals of NSV is to be extreme, is to be the flea in the hide of society, and to make sure everybody thinks and keep thinking about things we think are a lot of thinking. We talk about, discuss about ideas we take for granted. So ideas we do not want to think about, we do not want to talk about, we should talk about those ideas. And we are actually the organization who wants to maintain that habit.
All right, that is the first part. We're going to continue with the second part at redicemembers.com, our members website. That's where you go to support us. That's where you get a subscription. That's, of course, where you can find all the exclusive material that we have for our members, including Weekend Warrior, our news roundup show that we do almost every weekend. We also have other exclusive video materials. We have all our shows, both part 1 and 2, back to our start in 2006. We have just tons and tons of shows for you there, over 1,500 shows, I think at least, just radio shows, interviews. And then, of course, in addition to that, we have tons of video material for you there as well. So it's important that you sign up and support us so that we can continue bringing you reports, videos, interview shows, and of course, Weekend Warrior and all the other exclusive stuff that we do. Without you guys, we can't continue doing this. In a little bit less than a month from now, we're going to be relocating studios. We have a big move coming up. We're going to not be able to do as many of the interview shows in that period of time. We're going to have about a month probably in limbo, if you will, until everything is set up in the new space as we want them to. It's going to be pretty involved, and of course we hope that we can set things up and rebuild things that we need to in the new studio space. So if you want to help out with that, you can donate to us. If you're not yet a member, or if you've been previously a member, the best way to support us is to sign up for a membership. But you can also, of course, in addition to that, donate to us and help along with the move. That would help tremendously. As you know, we don't have any big sponsors, and we don't have anyone, you know, taking care of us in that way. We don't have ads on the website. We can't monetize YouTube, any of that. The majority of what we do for free. So we rely on you guys out there helping us out so we can ensure to continue, of course. So you can go to paypal.me/redeyes, or you can donate cryptocurrencies. We have the addresses in the description down below. So heads up on that. We'll keep you guys posted in terms of the status of that and how things are going. But we have the studio as is now for a little bit while longer, maybe 2 weeks or so. And then we're going to need to be able to dismantle things in this space before we can set up things anew again. But of course, we're going to bring you guys videos and updates and news reports and stuff like that in the meantime, of course. But yeah, thank you for watching. We're going to continue with part two right now with Otto from NSV. So please join us there. Go to redeyesmembers.com. And we'll see you on the other side of the break. Thank you for watching or for listening.